Welcome to Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program making space for the voices of gender diverse people. Produced at 3CR Community Radio in NAM, Melbourne, and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. I'm your host, Kanagi. Women on the Line acknowledges that this program is produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and their sovereignty was never ceded. We acknowledge their elders past and present, as well as the owners of the land on which you're hearing this from. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Dr. Anubha Sarkar is a lecturer of Global Creative Industries at City St. George's University of London and Deputy Program Director for the Bachelor of Arts in Media and Communication. Her research cuts across several disciplines with particular interest in creative economy, cultural and creative industries, policy, and cultural production. Her book, The Cultural Industry and Soft Power, Investigating the Global and Economic Rule of Bollywood, is forthcoming in 2026. I first spoke to Dr. Sarkar in 2021 for 3CR's Tuesday Breakfast Show. We talked about Bollywood's soft power, the rise of right-wing Hindu ideologies, rising anti-Muslim sentiments, and nationalism in India back then. In this episode of Women on the Line, Dr. Sarkar talks to us about what this looks like 5 years on.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the invitation. So I am Dr. Anubha Sarkar, and I'm a lecturer in global creative industries at a university in London. The thing is, I'm originally from India, and I grew up watching films. I remember my favorite pastimes was, you know, just sitting with my mother, and she would be watching films of every kind. She would be watching Bollywood films also, but she would be watching Malayalam films also. She would be watching artistic films to commercial films. And I think I grew up on an appetite of that. And then when I did my studies in journalism and then mass communication at Jamia in Delhi, I think my interest in films deepened. And then finally, when I thought about, okay, I want to do a PhD, I was like, okay, films is something that has been part of my growing up. And I would like to do a PhD because it's an investment of 4 or 5 years on something I'm deeply interested in. But I think what intrigued me more than storytelling was perhaps the role of policy and the role of government in the structure of the film industry itself. And that was what my PhD was on. Firstly, looking at how policies have impacted the film industry, but also looking at soft power of Bollywood cinema. How and why is it popular outside of India?
Okay, so like you, I also grew up with, you know, I grew up in Bombay with the heavy influence of Bollywood in my life. And it's been really horrible to see the decline of what Bollywood films have become. They're kind of being used as a sort of tool for the right-wing government.
I think the first thing we need to understand is that when India gained independence from the British colonial rule in 1947, India was perhaps one of the very few post-colonial nations to have its own indigenous film industry. And I'm not just talking about Bollywood, but I'm talking about film industries like Telugu, Tamil film industry, Bengali language film industry. India was one of the few countries that had this growing film industry. But at the same time, we need to remember that because it was a post-colonial nation, you know, the resources, or let's just say the aim of the government at that point was that, okay, we have come, or, you know, we have left this years of colonial rule. What is the role of film over here? So even since the beginning, films have generally towed the government line, or they have almost always been pro-establishment. So it should not come as a surprise to people that even the films now that are released, they are pro-establishment. But I think the difference here is that the films in the last decade are actively creating this revisionist idea of what India used to be and what it needs to be now. And now it needs to be something which is for Hindus. it is very obviously propagating this idea. And if you look at the films, the kind of storylines, a lot of the films that have been released have to do with these successful army campaigns or these secret operations that the Indian Army or Indian Navy were successful in, and maybe people have written books about it, and then a film is made into it just to kind of show how we as Indians, we need to protect this Hindu identity. And I think most recently we have had this film Dhurandhar 1 and Dhurandhar 2, which I feel kind of epitomizes that whole transition from when first BJP government came into power in 2014. It's now 10 years now, a decade, and we can see that. I think you and I would have probably seen it happening in front of our eyes, that it builds on top of each other. But the other thing I do want to point out, if you don't mind me saying this, is that the other technical aspect that people need to understand is, even though film has played such a large role in people's imagination, in Indian people's imagination, for our culture as well, actually, it wasn't under the until the year 1998 that the Indian film industry became officially an industry. What I mean by that is that before 1998, the film industry was not even recognized. Like, it was actually part of the informal economic sector, which surprises many people, but that's how it was. And what does it mean? In simple terms, it means that because it was part of the informal structure, there were no, say, minimum wage guidelines. Directors could not take loans from the banks to make films. You didn't have transparent financial resources that you could access to, or it wasn't like you have Dharma Productions now. You did not have that kind of studio making before 1998. But after 1998, once the industry was recognized, that is when a lot of formalization happened, wherein, now you see you have Dharma also, you have Yash Chopra, etc., all of these studios becoming like corporates, functioning like corporate organizations. Another interesting thing I think that people would, I think it would be interesting for people is that before 1998, because sources of finance, at least in Bollywood, was so murky, because you couldn't just take loans from bank, which is why you had the involvement of Dawood and a lot of black money, because it was a source, a financial source, just to fund films, because making films is not cheap.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point that is not often talked about. And you're exactly right. It's been 10 years of this government, which is crazy to me. The last time you and I talked about this was we did an interview in 2021, which is just a little bit after the BJP government, which is the current Indian government, who are on the far right, pushing a lot of far right pro-Hindu ideology. They had just been re-elected recently at that time. And we talked then about the impacts of that. And it has now been 10 years. They've been re-elected a third time. And yeah, a decade has passed. So what are your reflections on how that has changed Bollywood even more and how the ways in which these messages show up in the films now?
I think what has become is, it's not like the Prime Minister is coming out outright and saying that this film is bad. I think what's important is that you have these different non-state actors that are, in a way, being supported by the government. So, if, say, a film is released and it does not toe the Hindutva ideology, or say it even dares to show maybe some Hindu god, or, for example, in the film Jawan, when Deepika Padukone in that song was wearing that orange saffron color dress, and then there was so much trolling around it. Now, here's the thing: the conditions have been created that such trolling is allowed. And it's okay to troll in such manner. So when you have such conditions created, it means the prime minister or the government doesn't even have to do anything. It's your public which is creating this kind of moral censorship over what is offensive for Hindus and what is not offensive for Hindus. And that has really, really become more and more cemented. And just to repeat the example of Dhurandhar again, when it was released last year, when you had film reviewers and critics like, say, Anupama Chopra and Sucharita Tyagi, talking about, you know, undertones of nationalism and how the film was very pro-BJP, they were completely shut down. They had to pull down their reviews. It got that bad. And the question we should ask is, why have we reached such a stage that you have to pull down a review? You could disagree. Okay, sure. You could disagree that, okay, fine, the film is not pro-BJP. Cool. You can ignore the review. But you don't have to pull it down.
Yeah, and I think this question of moral policing is a really important one, because India has a history of this. You know, moral policing has been a thing for a long time, even before this government. It's amped up with this government, but it's been a tactic used by people in power for as long as I've been around. You know, I know it was happening in our parents' time. And I think that maybe this government has really like built on that existing thing, you know, of like it's very accepted in India to do that. And so they've built on it and they've emboldened the public to do this. And then they kind of sit back, right? They're like, well, you know, and exactly like you're saying, like they don't have to explicitly state anything because it's being done for them.
Exactly. I mean, if say, you know, if they really cared about freedom of speech, if they saw the kind of, you know, violence that is taking place over, say, certain forms of films that are being shown, or even, you know, some shows on OTT platforms, any, I guess, leader would come out and be like, hey, stop doing this. This is freedom of speech. It's all right. If you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. But the fact that, again, you know, no one's really saying anything, like you said, you know, they're emboldened. And a lot of their actions are then legitimized. And legitimized, if you, I'm sure you would have seen, like in the past few years, I think it was in 2020 when you had this IT Act, which came into play as well, which was enacted due to concerns over the kind of content that is being shown on digital media. Which is why in 2021, the OTT show Tandav on Amazon Prime, they had to actually remove scenes which contained particular Hindu gods, which apparently was offensive. But the makers, they had to remove it. And what this has also done over the years is that, of course, in addition to legitimizing this machinery, this moral policy machinery, or what is, you know, what offends Hindus and what doesn't, the other thing is you can sense that there's a certain sense of self-censorship happening on the producer's side. So if, you know, if we look at it from the producer point of view, I'm putting in the money. I cannot afford to lose money if I depict anything related to Hindu religion. You know, I'm going to play it safe. So you do have a certain form of self-censorship also happening, which does affect the diversity or the kind of stories that you see as well. Either you self-censor or you purposely have films that glorify the current regime's ideology.
Yeah. And another really interesting part of this that drives me crazy is that some of the biggest names in Bollywood are Muslim. So there's a weird conundrum right there where the same people who are the masses who are, you know, buying the anti-Muslim propaganda at the same time love Shah Rukh Khan or Salman Khan or Amir Khan or Saif Ali Khan or, you know, and they are largely silent, and it, you know, makes you wonder about their role in saying something And Shahrukh Khan has posted a Eid Mubarak post, and he's and Salman Khan is out greeting fans for Eid, and this is making the media. But at the same time, they're completely silent when it comes to daily harassment of Muslims and other minorities. Like, what do you think of that?
I know in general there's a lot of conversation and people say that, as celebrities they should say something, but I will differ here a bit. And at a personal level, I'm not surprised none of these actors are actually saying something, because I'm 100% sure they have been deliberately silenced because they know that if they do something, they will also face the consequences of it. And just to give you an example, like recently in the Oscars, Javier, he said, right, like, no to war, free Palestine. He said that. He has faced no consequences. Rather, he's been hailed, he's still safe over there. An Indian actor, if they say that, okay, no to lynching of Muslims or no to villainizing Muslims. Look at when, A.R. Rahman said that, he is being sidelined because of communal tensions or communal bias in Bollywood. He was again trolled. He was put down for it. So when people do speak up, they're put down for it. So I'm not surprised that they're not speaking out.
Yeah, but it's really interesting to me because there was a time in India where they were quite untouchable in their kind of status. And now we have these examples. We have the example of Sara Ali Khan, who is a Nepo baby. She's an actor, the daughter of an extremely famous Muslim Bollywood actor, but a Hindu mother, also an actor. And she's been has to write an affidavit in order to go into a temple and worship, right? But I feel like these kinds of public displays of power by the government are so damaging.
Yeah, and it's not just, of course, Bollywood. I know we are focusing on Bollywood, but if you just generally see the social and political milieu of the last decade as well, Muslims are questioned more. You have lynchings. I mean, look at the whole concept of love jihad itself. Love jihad essentially means it's this conspiracy theory that Muslim men in India, they fool or make Hindu women fall in love with them, and then they marry them, all so that they can procreate as many Muslims as possible and increase the population of Muslims. But also, I think recently Maharashtra also had this anti-conversion bill being passed. All of these measures have been legitimized by the government in power. So when you have things like being legitimized, so you have this environment where anything that you might speak out that, okay, hey, if the thing is, I'll be too scared to say love jihad is a controversy in India itself, because I'll be like, oh my God, people will come down on me. So it's this environment that has been created, which is why, the films that we are seeing also kind of are very pro this kind of environment. They don't want to ruffle the feathers too much. And I think it's also to do with the fact that, especially after COVID, the film industry has been hit really badly. Their economics have been affected. People are not going to the theaters as much as they used to before. And it's not just a phenomena in India, but worldwide as well. You see, there is this fragmentation in audiences. Audiences are not going to the cinema halls as much as they used to. So what brings people to the cinema halls? Which is also why Dhurandhar in a way has done really well, because it's kind of like a spectacle as well. So people go for the experience too.
They kind of blur reality and fiction, and they make it this like kind of larger than life spectacle to go and watch. And it's on purpose, right, that they blur those lines.
Yeah, it's on purpose. It's on purpose and it's profitable as well. So it financially works out, and it's a hit amongst people. People are writing praises of it, but yeah, it is a lot of insidious ideology at play with the film as well.
And then not only, do we have this and we have this extreme right-wing ideology, not only in India, but we're seeing it in the US. We're seeing it globally, really. But then we have India's ties with Israel, and we have we're seeing Modi very openly, say that his allegiance lies with Israel. Israel is, of course, openly anti-Muslim, and there's been an ongoing genocide in Palestine. And those two things are linked as well.
Yes, and I think that's been best represented by the fact that a film like The Voice of Hind Rejab is not being allowed to release in India because supposedly it will affect India-Israel relations. And it just baffles me in the sense that you can see because of the war, you do have now scarcity of LPG in India. It's having an effect. I would have expected the Prime Minister to be, I understand in international relations and diplomacy, you really have to be very careful in terms of, how you're building alliance, but also protecting your people's interest. Well, I don't see how it is protecting people's interest because the common man is suffering. And rather, I think what has happened is that the I'm not sure, I mean, if people in India realize that, or at least I think this, I mean, some people do perhaps, but the image of India abroad definitely is that it is very anti-Muslim. And by having ties with Israel, it's kind of just cementing that factor, which really does not help us at all because they're seeing it in a way that it's not just about being anti-Muslim, but also being anti-human rights as well.
What do you think the future is for Muslims and other minorities in India, given this soft power that is being sort of promoted through a medium like Bollywood?
Well, the first thing is, I do want to just add a caveat here about the soft power of Bollywood, like abroad. I do want to say that it's the audience mostly is the Indian diaspora. I think only a film like RRR had actually managed to break through the Indian diaspora, and you actually had non-Indian diasporic or non-South Asian diasporic people watching RRR and praising it, and that's why the song won the Oscar as well. So I don't think a film like Dhurandhar can go outside of the Indian diaspora, and I'm not even concerned about the soft power impact, but I think internally as a nation and as a society, I honestly am very pessimistic. I do not see, I think the damage that has been done generally to the kind of dialogue that we have in the digital sphere and in and around yourself, and the general hatred towards another community is not going to go away soon. Because, like I mentioned, from 2014 to now, 2026, it's been a decade now. And I think the government is still going to be in power for the next term as well. I mean, we haven't even had the time to cover how there's been ample evidence of vote manipulation. Right. So I don't see this particular government going away soon. And we will see even more and more degradation, I feel, of we as a society, of, our moral pinnings, what we think is right or wrong. Because we're also, entering into an environment where we have so much high unemployment again amongst educated youth. You have high unemployment. Our infrastructure is bad. You have monopolies in telecom. You have Reliance in airport. You have the Adanis. You have these kind of monopolies happening as well. So I'm not really seeing an improvement, and I think it will take decades for this harm to be completely reversed. It's not going to happen anytime soon. I do think it will die down because I think it's often all these processes are cyclical. moderate to right wing, and then it will definitely go towards moderate as well. But what the harm that has been done, it will take decades for it to go back to how we grew up, or our memories from how India was. I think probably when our children grew up, that's when things will start to change.
What do you think people can do to sort of combat it on their own? I know it's difficult with, these messages are coming at us from films, from social media, from, curriculums in school are being changed. History is being rewritten, basically. What can people do?
Oh wow, that's a very difficult question, but I think probably one of the things that people can do is just maybe take a step back. Of course, I do think all of us have some kind of biases and prejudices. We too are also not completely objective in everything. I think it helps to just take a step back and also just to listen to the other side. Or maybe have all the facts in one place. And I do feel like people have that much reasoning power that when they're given with, facts or, a logical facts, I think they can make their mind up. But I think so much of it gets involved in emotions that people lose that sense of being rational. I think that's one thing. But also, to be honest, all they need to do is just look at history. History, in a way, is also repeating itself in so many places in the world. And I think for that, just to be a bit patient about it, because these things, they take time. You can't get it in a few words in a tweet or from a reel in Instagram. I don't know whether that will happen or not, but yes, I do think people need to be a bit more patient, take a step back, look at history, but just also, just ha using a bit more critical thinking, I guess.
We just heard from Dr. Anubha Sarkar about Bollywood soft power and the rise of Hindu right-wing ideologies in India. If you would like to listen to our conversation from 2021, please check this episode's show notes at 3cr.org.au/womenontheline. Women on the Line is a national feminist current affairs program. It is produced and presented by a range of women and gender diverse broadcasters from 3CR in NAM, Melbourne, and broadcast across so-called Australia on the Community Radio Network with funding support from the Community Broadcast Foundation. The theme music for Women on the Line is by Ripley Kavara. All episodes can be downloaded from 3cr.org.au/womenontheline. I'm your host, Kanagi. Please join us next week for the next episode of Women on the Line.